Before we get started on the formal agenda, I'd like to take a brief moment, and we do have some special guests. We have a long way and on a cold night, so I'd like to just take everybody in order, starting with Heather. Just please briefly introduce yourselves and your affiliation. Heather?
Apologies, my voice is not all here. I'm Heather Davis-Reidel with AMX.
Paul Morrison, NEOS.
Okay. Steve Rubio, Planning Administrator at ODOT District 4.
Okay. Dave Mangold, also with a bit of a raspy voice, Randolph Township.
Mike Ondecker, Chairperson of CIC.
Krista Beniston, AMETS.
Jason Segedy, AMETS.
Seth Bush, AMETS.
Nate Brugler with AMETS.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll call the meeting to order and start with our minutes of the September 19, 2013 meeting, which were in your packets. Please take a moment to review the minutes if you haven't done so previously, and we will go ahead and entertain motions on the minutes as submitted.
No, you're the member, right?
Yeah. Only Beth is your eligibility.
Really? There's nobody else here that's...
Well, Dave just walked in.
Dave just walked in.
Okay. So I need to help vote on this.
Like
a motion for approval.
Okay. We have a motion for the approval of the September 19th minutes of our CIC meeting as submitted. Anybody care to make a second?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'll second the motion. We have a motion then to accept the minutes of the September 19, 2013 meeting as submitted. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
The motion carries. Before we go further with the formal agenda, Mr. Kish is here. He's been a frequent person in attendance. Could the three gentlemen who came in together, could you please just give us your name and affiliation?
My name's Craig Eberbrand with Arcadis Engineering.
Okay. Kevin Harris with Arcadis.
Okay.
And Adams with Arcadis.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, gentlemen. And also welcome. All right, you've completed the approval of the minutes. We'll now move ahead to staff reports. There are in the staff reports two very brief presentations for your information. And the state wide CMAC funding program for Ohio MPOs, which we've talked about before, and also a paragraph on the new round of project funding. If you would take time to review those. And our formal presentation under this item will be the technical progress report, and Krista will go ahead and fill in the details on that.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like Mr. Undecker just said, we just received a project applications for our next round of funding. Those will be reviewed by our committees in January. We should have decisions on those. One of the big things we've recently completed with the Connecting Communities Planning Grants, with the Montrose area, we had a survey, which we are at just under 700 responses. There was just a press release, about some of the major results, and the whole survey is on the website if you're interested. But some of the key findings were, you know, to get people to cross State Route 18 and the internal circulation for bike and ped. Safety was one of the largest impediments. A lot of people said that if there were sidewalks and crosswalks in place, they would feel more comfortable. Traffic and congestion are the number one issues for drivers, for all automobiles, but also for cyclists. That was people driving in the area was one of the number one safety issues. Most people agreed that the aesthetics were weren't a detriment to the area, but that the
they could be improved.
Yeah, that they could be improved. Sorry, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. But yeah, that, and so we also did a business survey, and we have about 30 responses to that. We'll be going forward and working with those more specific businesses in general and getting their input. So the Montrose survey, we have selected EDG as the consultants, and we're working to move forward with them. And earlier, hopefully in early 2014, we will be underway. And then the Barberton survey, or the Barberton planning grant, we are also working forward on that. And hopefully early in the spring, we'll move forward. And that's it.
I was just going to add, if you happen to be listening to WAKR tomorrow morning at 8:40, I'll be on there to talk about the survey. So, just to add to what Chris said, I mean, I think the big takeaway was people would like to see a more connected Montrose, both from a vehicular signage and continuity. People have trouble finding given businesses and if they're kind of buried in a plaza. But also the pedestrian issues, we got a lot of good input. Same thing with aesthetics. I think people felt like Montrose is pretty utilitarian in a way the aesthetics didn't bother them, either the businesses or the residents, but the kind of overwhelming sentiment was it's kind of an ugly place, basically. And I think the other takeaway is people would like to see it become more connected and look better, but expressed, I think, some doubts that that could ever happen. So I think that's kind of our challenge moving forward, is I think there are a lot of small things that can be done to make it better, even though we're very cognizant we're not going to recreate it as a quaint neighborhood or something like that.
What is the status of the Walmart project out there? This is completely separate of that issue, correct?
Right. In fact, part of our intent with this was whatever happened with that, we could, continue to try to make progress on some of these pedestrian connectivity issues. My understanding, I mean, the court did rule on whether Rothrock Road could be closed or not. The judge did rule that it can be, and it has been. There's still, I think, at least two lawsuits, though, related to whether the Walmart can be built on Rothrock, and so that's still pending. So
everything's still on.
Yeah, it's still all up in the air.
I know that was a big issue here a year or two ago.
Right.
We, filled the room with pay or something. Okay, well, good to see you're working on some pedestrian issues there also. No need to have to move the car everywhere. You should be able to walk to some of the stores.
That's the idea.
Okay, thank you very much. Does anybody else have any questions or comments on that subject or anything to do with the technical progress report? Okay, hearing none, we will move from that item to three very important items on tonight's agenda. We're going to start with the state of our region's transportation infrastructure. That is in your packets under attachment 5A. Very detailed, very illustrated. We also have some further information from Nate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming out. Just to introduce this subject, let me get this thing on. As you know, AMATS, we produce a whole lot of separate reports, some of them very specific in detail, and they're in some ways, you know, very focused on a certain topic or whatever. Those interested in planning issues, engineering issues, whatnot, may see the occasional story out there about, you know, the rating of the nation's infrastructure, you know, the state of the infrastructure. There's a lot of programs, funding programs out there related to that. And we were, you know, just at the office and trying to think of a way that we could get a hand on the state of our own infrastructure here within the greater Akron region. And we were just kind of brainstorming ways to do that, and the results were the report that you have in your packet there, attachment 5A. So as I said, we wanted to create, we wanted to create a one-stop place to look and just get a handle on the region's infrastructure, take a snapshot of it, and just see how we're doing. Rather than looking at all the individual street segments, intersections, things like that, we just want to look at big picture trends and kind of see what direction we're moving. And a secondary purpose of this report was to benchmark ourselves to our peers, and also just to create baseline data, as I said, so as we go forward in the future, as projects are completed that we fund and everything, to see how they're actually improving the overall status of the infrastructure in our region. This kind of illustrates many of the reports that we've kind of taken elements of, a lot of ODOT information, everything, and put it into this report, try to make it as concise as possible. This presentation will just hit on some of the highlights. There's a lot more detail in the actual report there. But basically, the first thing we had to figure out is, what do we consider infrastructure? There's all kinds of transportation infrastructure in the region. One problem that we run into when wanting to grade it or, you know, get a handle on how and what kind of state of repair it's in is we need data to be available to make that determination. There are bike trails, there are sidewalks and everything, but there's just not a lot of quantifiable data out there for those. So we decided that basically there were two elements that we had a lot of data out there for that really comprise most of the infrastructure for our region. Part one, we wanted to look at the federal classified roadways. That includes, you know, your major roads, your freeways, and everything like that. And to grade those, we use the pavement condition ratings, which communities and ODOT and everything periodically take just to test the pavement condition. Secondly, we wanted to look at the vehicular bridges. This analysis does exclude railroad-only bridges and pedestrian-only bridges. Just want to look at vehicular bridges. That's what the buses use. That's what our truck traffic uses. We thought that was a pretty good way of, just getting a grip on all the infrastructure in the region. And there's a lot of data out there on those, thanks to ODOT. So diving into those, the first part, when we looked at the roadways, we have presented pavement condition ratings in maps and reports before, and there were many tiers. It was maybe a little bit complex. We wanted this to be an easy read, a quick read, and a real quick summary of everything. So we kind of condensed those into three tiers, a good, acceptable, and poor. Anything that had a pavement condition rating of 80 or over, we considered that street to be in a good state of repair. That's generally a pretty smooth street, and different communities have different opinions as to what's good, what's bad, and everything. But those seem to kind of fit a pretty good, make a pretty good start there. The report goes into quite a bit of detail as to how pavement condition ratings are collected, and the different kind of defects and everything. Just kind of wanted to breeze through this real quick, but that's one thing we wanted to that was the first time we really presented that and kind of even described what a pavement condition rating is. So, as a result of our analysis, the data that was out there, the AMATS region is on the right, and we also did it, we didn't go to the community level, kind of did it by county. Once again, that's the data that's out there. Basically, about half of our roads would be considered in a state of good repair. This includes, as I said, freeways and everything, and 12% in the poor range. One good thing that's a good finding is that the conditions seem pretty equally distributed throughout all the counties that fall within the AMATS region. No one county stands out as having, you know, really bad roads or being far superior. So that means I think we're doing a pretty good job at, you know, evening out, you know, the troubled areas and doing improvements through the region. Let's see. The picture looks even better if we just isolate the freeways. When you just look at freeways, this would also include Route 8, Route 21, freeway-like roads, I guess, though not necessarily interstate highways. Two-thirds, basically, are in a state of good repair, and a very small percentage would be classified as poor. One good thing about that is it just tells us exactly where we need to focus, you know, to, you know, try to get everything out of the red, whether that'll happen or not, you know, let's make our best attempt. And then to benchmark ourselves, you know, in some of our reports, we've compared Akron to similar cities in different states and everything. One problem when doing pavement condition ratings is that even neighboring states use wildly varying methods to collect pavement conditions. Some of them go through an A through F scale. There's just different, you know, systems that they use. So with the data we had, the best thing to do, and probably the most relevant anyway, is to measure or compare ourselves to our peer metropolitan areas within Ohio. These are sorted by good, the percentage of streets that were good. As you can see, when we look at all major metro areas in Ohio, the two primary AMATS counties kind of fall in the middle of the pack. Not too far ahead, not too far behind anyone. But the good news is when you, if you chop off the first four, you're left with the metropolitan areas that comprise Northeast Ohio. And I think it's a good sign that the AMATS counties are, you know, at the head of the pack when you're just looking at Northeast Ohio communities. So that's some good news. And then the second phase of the, you know, judging our infrastructure is looking at bridges. There are a few different ways of, like a holistic way of rating the area's bridges, and then you can kind of, you know, dive down into that a little bit. But basically, the way they're rated, they look at three components, three major components of a bridge. Most of the bridges are graded by ODOT annually, and they kind of look at these three components. There's a rating system of 9, which is excellent condition, and 0, which the bridge is put out of commission, basically, until it's either replaced or whatever. And then, you know, everything in between. Anything 4 or below is considered poor condition. So, one good thing about bridges is there's the Federal Highway Administration maintains the National Bridge Inventory, so we're able to benchmark our bridges to the national average. We can look at all bridges across the nation. And the results were impressive. I think we fared pretty well. When you look at the top two, excellent and very good rated bridges, and that's the percentages like heavily overweighs the national average. And likewise, at the bottom end of the scale, and that's is also, you know, we have fewer, a smaller percentage than the national average. We're doing pretty good in that regard. Now, as I said, that's looking at the bridge as a whole. There are two like sub-classifications that bridges can fall into. The first one is called functionally obsolete bridges. This one is not quite as concerning. There's nothing structurally wrong with bridges that fall within that category. It basically just means usually they're older, they don't meet current design standards. The clearances may be a little bit lower than they're supposed to be. Maybe the angle of approach isn't where you want it to be, or the lanes aren't as wide as, you know, a modern bridge would be built to today's standards. The one that we really wanted to focus on were the structurally deficient bridges. And to be labeled structurally deficient, that means that one of those three components has to be rated poor or less. That doesn't mean that the bridge is ready to collapse, you know, like the one in Minneapolis or anything like that. It just means we need to keep an eye on it. It usually means that there are more frequent observations of these bridges, and, you know, and maintenance needs to occur pretty briefly, but you know, on one particular part of it. But that's what we use to determine whether something was in a state of good repair or not. So, just looking at structurally deficient bridges, there are 71 in the AMATS region. We did find a little difference by county. There are a slightly higher percentage of bridges that fall within this classification in Portage County. There are not as many bridges there, but so the percentage is a little bit higher. But generally, they're distributed pretty well throughout the counties and everything, too. And once again, stacking ourselves up to the national average, we fall a little bit below the national average, which is a good sign. So, of the 984 bridges that we looked at, that's any bridge that's 20 feet or over. So this includes even tiny little, culvert-like bridges out in the, town, remote rural townships and everything. Basically, 913 of them are in a state of good repair. The report goes into great detail as to which bridges those are. And actually, this data is as of 2010. So there are bridges that would have been labeled structurally obsolete on this report, but there are projects planned for them. ODOT has a program coming up starting in 2014 over the next 3 years to specifically all around the state take bridges off the structurally deficient classification. So we hope those numbers will improve. We'll monitor that going in the future. Comparing those two, when you look at functionally obsolete bridges, once again, those are the ones that have no structural problems per se. They're just outdate design-wise. We are significantly higher than the national average. About a quarter of our bridges fall within that classification. A function of that would just be that we're in an older industrial area. The average bridge age in our region is 49 years old. There are many that are significantly older than that. And they were just built in a different time to different standards. That's why we have so many that fall within that. Very importantly, more from a safety perspective, I think the structurally efficient bridges, as I mentioned, we came out a little bit below the national average there. And that's pretty much it. The report goes into a lot more detail, as much as you care, and gives examples of the different deficiencies and things. But this is our first attempt at this. We tried to make it so that we can replicate this report in the future as new data is released. It would probably be every 3 years or something like that. And when they on a set cycle come out with new data and everything, and we can judge our progress and see how things are going, what direction we're going, where we need to focus and whatnot. So that's
it's very much appreciated. You included some of the nomenclature and some of the basic terminologies about the bridges. I just had one question about, you've got bridges that are, serving county roads, state roads, federal highways. Let's say a bridge inspector found a really imminent problem with a bridge on any level. The loss of the bridge would damage a lot of economic factors, people's travel time to work, commercial vehicles having to serve, their customers and so forth. If a bridge is found to have an imminent problem on any level, is there funding available to get after the problem on an expedited basis? Or does it have to go through, close and then go through the process?
It's hard to say. AMATS itself, with our normal funding that we specifically administer, we don't do a whole lot of pure bridge projects. We do a lot of projects with some bridge work on them and everything. ODOT, the counties themselves and the cities themselves generally do a lot of that. And I think because not as much federal money goes in there, they can expedite these. But I think of all the potential transportation issues out there, nothing scares people. Nothing could be more disastrous or, more certainly economically important than an unsafe bridge. And a great example was in Minneapolis, the I-35 bridge. They found money to fix that, as quickly as they possibly could. ODOT has made this a priority. We received some questions from Bill Mackey. He was asking, what the plans are for repairing bridges, and just on October 31st of this year, a couple months ago, some of this, I don't think this money is coming directly from the turnpike bonds that were issued, but they have a little money in the budget, and they do have a program to fix. They plan on fixing 200 county bridges around the state, 40 in the first year, and they've earmarked $120 million to repair those bridges, and many of these are just the small county road bridges and everything.
And they use ODOT, right?
Yes, that's ODOT that's doing that. It's called Ohio's Bridge Partnership. They have a good page on their website and a map. We don't have that on the slides or anything like that, but it shows throughout the state. There are none in the AMATS region on this first year, but it's a three-year program. They've got the first 40 of those 200 identified, and it expresses that they're going to work closely with all the local communities and everything to really determine which bridges, need to be stepped up in priorities. That is definitely a top priority.
We have 18 structures within our district that are going to be in that program. I guess when you mentioned funding, CEAO is really about the only program I know about that sets aside really emergency VR money. I don't know how much it is, but through the County Engineers Association.
Oh, okay.
For some of these.
Is that sort of like an insurance sort of pool or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the impression I get for any type of really drastic, dramatic emergency type of situation.
Okay.
And Steve, the scenario that Mike mentioned, I would suspect, just given working with ODOT and with the municipalities, that exact scenario is probably very rare, right? Where you would notice an imminent problem with a bridge to the point it might have to be closed, or I can only maybe think of one example in our region. There might have been a smaller bridge in Portage County. I might not even be right about it closing, but it's pretty rare.
Years ago, my nearby county road, or actually I think it was a township road bridge, was closed and remained closed for like decades till they finally got some funding. I would hate to see that happen. If we can avoid those bridges being closed on a long-term basis, it would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people working hard to make sure that doesn't happen. And I think one of the takeaways kind of overall from what Nate presented is, based on the data that he showed, our region is doing pretty well as far as maintaining things, especially the slide he showed on the interstates. A lot of times it is those township or county roads that aren't maintained as well, mostly because of budgetary reasons. But I think that's one reason in the plan. If you guys remember when we approved that a couple months ago, we continue to advocate a fix-it-first philosophy, because we recognize there's a lot of good work on maintenance being done and want to kind of keep that culture of repairing things before they get too far gone going.
Well, the American Society of Civil Engineers often has a report, comes out, yearly, on the state of U.S. infrastructure. This seems to be consistent with that report. I mean, there's what they usually rate it. You guys are members, right? A D, I think, is what the country's infrastructure usually comes out to be. And it seems there are some there. And thank you for finally clarifying the difference between functionally obsolete and structurally deficient. I honestly didn't know which was which. I think that's good. Hopefully I'll have a chance to take a read at that.
Anybody else have any comments or questions on this? Mr. Mackey.
If ODOT does 20 feet and over, does that mean the county engineer does all smaller ones, whether it's in the county, the city, the township? No one knows?
No, I think it's not more based on the footage or the length of it. It's what route that's on. If it's on the county route, county structure.
Here, everything 20 feet.
I think that's what that's
Ohio's.
Well, I think that's what the feds categorize.
I think that's just the definition of a bridge for the purpose of
the federal guideline. Is 20.
Well, we mentioned who does it here. I just wondered who does the smaller ones, counties.
It would be whatever type of road.
Whatever roadway. We all have a lot of structures between 10 and 20, more culvert related than we're trying to get grasp of.
On our structurally deficient bridges in AMATS, you list 71. I've only come up with 60 on page.
There's 16 there. There's another table that follows that one that has about 10 bridges.
Right.
Those are in there. Those are
ones that are also included in the previous table.
Yeah, they thought they comprised that 71.
Right. Well, that
those
would,
are the
that
ones
would
that
round
we have
it out. That would round it out. ODOT is in 2014. Would you rephrase that again? They're attacking what type of bridge?
Well, I just looked this up. You forwarded your questions. Appreciate that, and was kind of looking into it. There's just a new program that was announced a couple months ago. It's the Ohio's Bridge Partnership, and
they're mostly county engineer structures.
Okay,
they're a lot of these county routes, a lot of the ones we're talking about.
Okay, so they're going to attack the structurally deficient ones.
Well, I think it'll be a combination,
functionally and structurally. I would think the functionally deficient. fire under the pot because you don't want anything to fail.
There's the map there that they have on the website.
Right. Well, that's outside of our area. I'm just worried about the 71 in here. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, functionally obsolete is bad, but you can get over it safely. Structurally deficient is, that's the red flag that should be at the end of each bridge saying, drive at your own risk. You're familiar with red signals.
Yeah.
And I, in a whole, I like the report. It was, one of the maps was just too busy. Too many colors for my slow mind to, to get at one time.
I think one part of
smaller maps.
But
I think it's a good report. It's a good start. I appreciated the pavement ratings and what people call it. I mean, I just know it's a bad road. I went out and it was raveling or it's bonded improperly or whatever.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments or questions? If not, we'll move from that topic to the next presentation, which is the presentation discussion regarding the 2.6-mile widening of Interstate 271 to six lanes in Macedonia. Prefacing the discussion, I would point out that we have five resolutions for the consideration of the committee tonight. They're all contained in your packets. Under, I believe it's 6A through E. And I'm just going to take a moment, since they're not listed on the formal agenda, I'm just going to read through them very quickly. The first three, 17, 18, and 19, have direct connection to the I-271 project. The other two are resolutions for our consideration. Resolution 2013-17. Concerns of conformity determination and concurrence with the revised air quality conformity analyses for the Cleveland-Akron air quality area necessitated by the Amendment to Transportation Outlook 2035 and the TIP fiscal year 2014-17. Resolution 2013-18 is approving Amendment 1 to the Transportation Outlook 2035 to add the I-271 widening. Resolution 2013-19, approving Amendment Number 5 to the Transportation Improvement Program Fiscal Year 2014 to 2017 to add I-271 widening. Those are the three items concerning the I-271 project. Then in addition, we have Resolution 2013-20, which is approving Amendment Number 6 to the Transportation Improvement Program Fiscal Year 2014-17, to add Aurora Safe Routes to School SRTS plan, Barber SRTS, Ellsworth Hill SRTS, and Ridman SRTS, revise the schedule of the Hiram Village sidewalks and Howe Avenue, and cancel State Route 619 Worcester Road. And finally, Resolution 2013-21, approving Amendment Number 7 to the Transportation Improvement Program Fiscal Year 2014-2017 to add revised funds in fiscal year 2014 for part of capital projects. We'll be considering those resolutions immediately after the presentation of the I-271 project. And Krista will fill in the details and give us the rest of the information on I-271.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, this is an amendment for the I-271 widening for Transportation Outlook 2035 and the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal year 2014 to 2017. Real quickly, because AMATS is a metropolitan planning organization, one of our major responsibilities is to create a regional transportation plan to oversee the expenditure of federal funds. The 271 widening amendment is a major capacity adding project, and because of its significance is why it has to be approved to be on the TIP and the transportation plan. The amendment process, the request was submitted by ODOT to add a new project. Like I said, the project must be in both Transportation Outlook and the Transportation Improvement Program to be eligible for federal transportation funds. The Amendment must go through air quality conformity. We are in a non-attainment zone with the Cleveland area. We have done the air quality conformity analysis, and as it is a capacity adding project for both ozone and PM2.5, and it does not add any adverse impacts on the air quality. It meets the modeling. The project is fiscally constrained. Public involvement, this is our second public meeting that was also tweeted and made available on our website. Anyone can make comments about the project, and we'll direct those to the policy committee. We also did an environmental justice scan, and there are no adverse impacts on the project area. The project description, it's I-271 in Macedonia. The project will be from 4 lanes to 6 lanes. It is from just north of State Route 8 to the Cuyahoga County line. Engineering is scheduled in 2014, using about $2.5 million in state funds. Construction is also scheduled in 14, using about $1.8 million in federal funds and $62 million in state funds. Overall, the project is just under $61 million. And here is a map of the project. And that's it. If you have any additional questions, if you're happy to answer them, or we have someone from ODOT who would be happy to answer more detail on this.
Question, why? We've already got this terrible traffic jam problem between 480 and 271 every morning going into the city. Fortunately, it's 7 in the morning. It's not too bad when I have to go through there. And as most of the people know here, I don't think we should be building more pavement. We need to use alternative transportation. We had more than 10 years ago a plan for a commuter rail project so those people could be productive and doing things on board instead of stuck in a traffic jam, which I don't see how this is going to help the problem at 480 and 271. If any of the consultants would be able to explain how those three lanes are going to merge into an already three-lane highway that's congested consistently, level of service D or lower every morning.
Well, I think just briefly before any details, you know, our MF policy is preservation first, but I mean, north in Cuyahoga County, they are, I think it is even more of an issue, and they are going ahead with widening it. So, I mean, if you came to the county line, and just because it hit the county, didn't get widened, I think it would cause a lot of issues there, too.
Yeah, this is kind of part of a larger
right. District 12 strategy. District 12 selling a job in 2015 that'll go from the top north of this.
Fix that problem.
Fix the merge before it.
Yeah, so this isn't being changed in isolation. It's all part of a
corridor. Is the traffic volume on this segment that busy? I only run this occasionally. I don't find it to be that busy. Is 6 lanes absolutely needed? Why?
Yeah, we can't build it otherwise. I mean, I think the volumes are in 60 to 70,000.
Miles per hour?
Or vehicles per day.
Per day.
And Dave, I think one of the issues, like one reason we're amending the plan is we didn't, when we did our congestion analysis, see it as a super congested area compared to some other ones, and when there wasn't as much funding available, felt like it wouldn't be as high of a priority. But Steve could speak to this more. I think probably a big factor here is since ODOT's doing the project up in Cuyahoga County, in addition to whatever congestion might be here, it's probably not going to make sense to go, because I think you guys are going to be at 8 lanes up there, to go from 8 lanes to 4 lanes, and I imagine also you're anticipating future traffic on it, not just for what it carries today. So
once we build those additional lanes, we're going to be able to maintain them, and those bridges are just going to be expanded, completely rebuilt.
They're being replaced and widened.
Yeah.
And they're not in any way structurally deficient.
That I can't answer.
Why wasn't this, if the planning had been done adequately, 25 years ago, that should have been built to accommodate.
The train has left the station.
We're destroying infrastructure that still serves.
Let's talk about what we have to work with now.
Understand.
25 years ago is history.
Is the county line in this?
The thick black line at the top.
The dark line?
The thick black one across the top is the county line.
I went to the, this is Mr. Mackey, I went to the pre-meeting on this and discussion, and driving north on 271 coming out of Cuyahoga Falls, there's a definite slowdown. You're trying to get north, say, to go up to some meeting or appointment. And, of course, when 271 hits 480, it absolutely crawls. So, but that's Cuyahoga County, their district, to get it widened and get those lanes widened. That bridge up north of there is widened on the way to Sugar Land Boulevard. It's already there, never been used, that lane. So at least we're hitting now rather than 20 years down the road when it would be 10 miles an hour down that road. We're getting it done. And I have to agree with the ODOT position that we'll just sort of combine all the projects in one area and move traffic through it.
Thank you very much.
Make that known.
Before we formally close, anybody else have anything at all? All right. Thank you very much. All right. We'll then move on to the final of our presentations for tonight, which is going to be presented by Mr. Hunter Morrison of the Northeast Ohio Sustainable Communities Consortium. Again, thanks to all of our speakers tonight and all of our guests for coming out on a bitter evening. And I'll now turn the floor over to Mr. Morrison.
Well, thank you.
Sure, go ahead.
Hunter, do you mind if I just add something? I just wanted to frame up the issue and reiterate what Mike said, just thanking Hunter for coming out. Hunter's the executive director of the Northeast Ohio Sustainable Communities Consortium, which is a nonprofit organization that was created 3 years ago to look at the social, economic, and environmental issues pertaining to the sustainability of a 12-county region, which includes Cleveland, Akron, Canton, and Youngstown. And just to put it in context so you guys understand maybe how Hunter's remarks and a lot of the good information he has fit in, AMATS is a member of the nonprofit organization, NEOSCC. There are 33 board members. I sit on the board of NEOSCC as the AMATS representative. And the organization over the last 3 years has done a lot of data collection and analysis. It's done what we call building collaborative capacity, which is basically getting all of us from all these different areas in Northeast Ohio to work together better, which, however well we work, I think we can always work better. So that's been very valuable. And then thirdly, the organization, this kind of pertains to what Hunter is going to discuss specifically tonight, is looking at a policy framework for how we can collectively look at the region's future and take action on some of the problems and challenges that are unique, largely to regions like ours in the Rust Belt, in older areas like widespread abandonment and vacancy in some of our larger cities, as well as this phenomenon of kind of continuing to grow outward without adding population and the cost of infrastructure, kind of the issues you were getting at, Dave, a couple minutes ago. So with that, I will turn it over to Hunter. Hunter, just for your edification, we've got probably, it's about 7:45, around 8:45, they usually want us out of here, but you should have a pretty good window of time to talk.
So and I can do one of those college lectures.
And I'd say, I talked to Hunter about this before, if you guys have questions even as he's going or want to stop and discuss something pertaining to a slide, I think we can keep it fairly informal. So
I appreciate that.
Take it away.
First of all, I want to thank you for having me tonight. And I want to publicly thank Jason and his team for being very key founding members of the consortium. This came together about four years ago, I think, Jason, when the feds from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Transportation, and the EPA came together and said, really should collaborate. Put together a unique opportunity to address broadly defined issues of sustainability across the region. AMATS, NOAACA, Eastgate, SCATS, and the and the other organizations, NEFCO being another one, and a number of the constituent counties and cities came together. That was, I think, as I recall, it wasn't the original intent. There were about four different applications going out, but with some help from the Fund for Our Economic Future, we put together an unprecedented joint grant application, which called for creating a nonprofit organization with these bodies on its board to facilitate, encourage, and enable the sort of collaboration and collaborative effort we're talking about. I would also like to say this is a wonderful publication that you just came out with. And I think we've done a lot already in collaboration. We got thanks to people here and at the other MPOs in Cuyahoga County, we developed the first ever parcel-based land use map for Northeast Ohio for 1.8 million individual parcels. It's accurate because planners don't provide the data. County auditors do, and their lawyers, and the property owners and their lawyers make sure it's reasonably accurate, or they get on the county auditor, right, get on this case. So with the help of particularly Bob Now and his team down at SCATS, we were able to develop a protocol for ramping up about 120 different classifications into about 8 land use classifications, standard ones. That became a key input for what we've been doing with something called scenario planning. The other thing we did jointly, and the credit here belongs directly to AMATS for developing a protocol for generalizing zoning maps. Now there are about 400. There are actually 400 local jurisdictions in Northeast Ohio. Each and every one of them has some level of zoning control. County planning commissions have some measure of control over townships, but it's fairly limited. And home rule communities have nobody telling them what to do. Needless to say, everybody's classification structure is a lot different. And Krista and her team developed for your connecting communities a way of looking at this. Well, we were able to take that with your guidance and blow that out for the entire region, all 12 counties. One of the counties, frankly, Ashtabula County, had nothing on in digital format, so your partner or agency Eastgate created the digital mapping for all this. These are parcel-based land use, parcel-based zoning, not shape files, so it ties all together. But all the, and we're getting way well beyond my experience, but data backing up each and every one of those. So it's a very rich piece of data and tools that we already can use, and communities in Northeast Ohio, all of which are stressed in terms of their planning capacity, can use. I'd also like to say that in a prior life, I was planning director of Cleveland, and for three different terms, I was the president of NOACA. So I've been involved for a good many years in a number of infrastructure decisions. Dave, you were talking about this project on 271 wide. That actually started 27 years ago when my daughter, who's now in medical school, was newborn. My wife was a state legislator, and we had a fair amount of time on our hands when Jesse was born, where I was taking care of her. And Mayor Voinovich has said, we really do need to start looking at the Warrensville Township land, now known as Chagrin Highlands, and see what we can do with it. So as I was taking care of Jesse, I had a lot of time to sort of think about what we do with 600 acres at 271 in Harvard. Well, that became the Chagrin Highlands development, which now has Eaton on top of it, on a site that we had designated for a Fortune 500 company like a TRW, which might leave town, or a Fortune 500 we might attract. That particular plan put 600 acres into commercial development, gave ODOT the rationale and the reason for doing the dual-duals. We're vastly expanding the 271 corridor capacity and creating a new interchange in Harbor, which opened up the 271 area for the development you see today. Harbor had no interchange, so our 600 acres was useless, except for tuberculosis sanatoriums, potter's fields, and the workhouse, which is what we've been using it for since 1910. All the development, including MBNA's headquarters, Eaton's headquarters, Progressive's headquarters, the Mount Yehuda Hospital, the new shopping center, and Tri-C was there, and the Nike base was there, which we had to get rid of. But all the development that you see, basically from Wilson Mills Road south, came out as a result of a decision was made to spend $150 million for the Great Hills. That also encouraged and created opportunities to expand the residential development, which now is putting pressure on Geauga County, which will be, as you'll see, a net loser, because if it's going to absorb all those people, it's going to have to build a great deal of infrastructure. There's a 10-mile band, 10 to 15-mile band from the center line of 271 going east into South Russell that was encouraged 27 years ago when we did this. Now, with hindsight, I might do it differently today, but that's what we did. And this then created the demand, which, having now commuting for the last 3 years from Cleveland to Akron, reverse commuting, I get to see, and for 10 years before that, I commuted out to Youngstown. I see people coming in on those freeways at 20 miles an hour. There's a whole lot of brain power heading up to Progressive and the clinic and all, sitting in traffic on a day like this today, in 15 to 20 miles an hour. And going backwards, it's the same way. This infrastructure investment that we made then was the smart money that created the opportunity for development to take place all along it, in a catchment zone that's about 10 to 15 miles, and you see it on this land use map that we did. It's a very clear band that comes from I-90 all the way down to Summit County. That's created a great deal of opportunity for new development, but it's also exacerbated the abandonment of the core city, particularly Cleveland and the inner suburbs. That was not our intention 27 years ago, but we didn't have the tools to predict that. Not to say we didn't know what we were doing. We knew what we were doing based on the old models. Now, the old models were based on population projections made in 1970 and thereabouts by the Southern County Transportation Study, which now NOAC and AMATS are the heirs to, by comparable work in Canton, by comparable work out in Youngstown and Warren. Taken together, those analytics projected approximately 5 million people in Northeast Ohio. We were 4 million people at the time. We're less than 4 million people today. Some studies done privately by Constantine Doxialis, led for the Cleveland's Chamber of Commerce and Growth Association, projected growth as high as 6 million people and suggested that the intersection of all these freeways would be a major new town with a high-speed rail running right the middle way through it, which is why the Coliseum was located there, to be in the middle of the downtown of the new development. But as you may recall, in 1970, we had booming rubber plants in Akron, we had a booming steel industry and auto industry in Cleveland, and Youngstown, Ohio was the third largest steel manufacturing center in the country, and the fifth largest in the world. So a funny thing happened about 10 years after these projections, it all began to fall apart. As a result of the loss of our economic base and the jobs that went with it, we have had a stagnant population. In fact, we are a shrinking region. We're about 3-4% below where we were. It's not 7% below where we were back then. But we really haven't adjusted to that, because if we look at how we've absorbed land since that point in time, our per capita land absorption is about 23% higher. We've built our region for 5 million people, and we have 4 million people in it. If I say nothing tonight, then we have a gap. If we could walk away with that elevator speech, that's the whole story. That really is the whole story of what's been happening in Northeast Ohio. We continue to build as though we were bigger than we are. and we have not adjusted. And the projections that we've done suggest that even looking even more off at the more optimistic last 20 years, we see very modest growth. And if we get optimistic and see growth to the level of national levels, we might reasonably expect, if we capture our fair share of the national growth and stop losing congressmen every 10 years, we get 800,000 people. We get close to the 5 million people we built for. We looked at it another way and said, well, what happens if our employment, we worked with a team deal in the chambers and worked and concluded, well, maybe I think if we really work hard at it, we can get to the level of national job growth, we get about 500,000 jobs. So I think that it's safe to say that we have probably built the region we need to build today and for the foreseeable future. And even if we grow, we've got enough urbanized land to accommodate another million people. That means that as we look at investments going forward, not something that is sort of in many ways finishing the game here, but as we go and look at the next 25 years of investment, we need to ask the question, are we creating the sort of place we can afford? Or are we creating the sort of place that is going to bankrupt us? I'll show you numbers which suggest that if we continue on the path, we are going to see significant downward fiscal pressure on each and every one of our local governments across Northeast Ohio. Now, I don't want to be draconian about it, but this is a group that knows what we're talking about and is wrestling daily and monthly with these issues. We are not doing a regional plan. You do the transportation plans for two counties. Nowaka does it for 5. Eastgate does it for 2. We're doing a framework, a vision for the future to enable better decision making because it's more informed decision making about what we can do and should do in Northeast Ohio to create a more vibrant, resilient, and sustainable region. What we've been doing, particularly in the last year, has really been drilling down on the questions of where are we headed? What are the possibilities for alternatives, and where do we want to go? Where are we headed? Started with looking at the trends. We took that map of 1.8 million parcels and the land use and the zoning. We've worked with our consultant team, which includes Suzaki of Boston and Fregonese, one of the leading scenario planning firms in the country out of Portland. And we have analyzed. We've looked at the land use patterns and trends, the population patterns and trends, and the employment patterns, and laid out, first of all, what is the trend, and went to the public on that. Then we did alternatives based on different ways in which we might develop into the future and the more optimistic employment and population projections that I suggested, and came back out in July and August and talked about that. We had meetings over at Kent State, and we had meetings at the Urban League. And finally came back out in October to talk about where do we want to go? What is the emerging vision? Where we are now is to put these ideas forward. We're going to come to our board on the 17th and ask to release a draft vision framework and products presentation to the public and spend January and part of February going out to meetings like this. And I'm very glad that we've had the opportunity to start here. What is a regional vision? Again, it's not a plan. It is an aspirational future for Northeast Ohio built on public engagement and accompanied by a set of recommendations and tools to make it a reality. It's based on two types of facts. Objective facts from the census, from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, from the Federal Reserve, from the local communities, from the land use and zoning maps, from the state of Ohio, and looking at those trends in a very objective and rational way, but of equal and perhaps greater importance to the community values. We try across the region, across our 12 counties, to really probe to find out where people are to create a regional vision. Again, this is a very broad look. This drawing is something of a cartoon because it communicates sort of the broad patterns. But understand that behind it is rich data up front on those parcels. We aggregated those to about 800,000 cells of land use to look at what's going on in each one of them. And what we find is increasing abandonment in our urban areas. We find that new development is taking place in a dispersed form at the edges of the metro areas on land that is currently agricultural or undeveloped. We are developing the bulk of our new product at the edges of our metros. We are not building significant new product except for places like downtown Cleveland in the areas that are already developed. We see an increasing distance between people and jobs, which has a cost impact both for the households and for the firms. And we have limited transportation options other than personal vehicles. So this is the sort of the big picture as we look at it, and this is how it begins to play itself out. This map is called a heat map. It looks at in blue at the areas that are subject to abandonment over and high vacancy over the next 25 years, and in yellow the areas that are subject to or likely to see growth and development in the next 25 years. These numbers are based on the trend projection, where we basically took the trends from 1990 to 2010, which show modest growth. Projected them out, what we find is less than 100,000 new residents. Now, that's very consistent with what ODOT says in the project numbers that go into your models. What we see is a continued development of new housing to meet new demand for new product, not necessarily new demand created by new residents, but by people wanting to upgrade and change their lifestyle. And we see, in a basic supply and demand function, about 175,000 houses abandoned. With no new, with limited new population growth and slightly more robust household growth, we are building more housing than we need in terms of the total supply. And we have a surplus. That surplus is generally in the older parts of the region. That's it. Youngstown has been dealing with this issue since the steel mills collapsed. So has Warren. Cleveland is seeing, in many ways, with the subprime lending, significant abandonment, particularly on the east side of Cleveland. And the African-American community that's been on the east side of Cleveland has been taking advantage of opportunities in the suburbs and leaving in large numbers. But we also see, and Jason, you've made this point about abandonment in Akron. Akron's done a phenomenal job of keeping ahead of it. But a lot of its housing is worker housing about 100 years old now. And if there's other options somewhere else, and it's relatively affordable, people will go from old to new. While Akron has done a great job of trying to replace, even with that, it's facing pressure. Canton is seeing pressure emerging, Elyria and Lorain as well. Our, what we call the legacy cities, the historically industrial cities, where we had our industry, where many of us grew up, where the neighborhoods were close to the factories, those are the places that are subject to abandonment. And again, the new development takes place at the edges. What we see is then, in the aggregate, mounting infrastructure costs at the edges, because you got to build the stuff for new, but it's extremely difficult to abandon the old infrastructure in the center. So we see neighborhoods with streets and sewer lines and water lines and no ratepayers, no taxpayers. That hits not only our tax base, it hits our electrical and gas and water utility rates. But somebody's got to pay for that. And we see rising transportation costs because in a variety of ways we're incentivizing jobs to move further up. We're incentivizing with infrastructure, but we're also incentivizing with tax abatements, we're also incentivizing with SBA loans. We're also incentivizing it by the way in which our brokers, our industrial brokers, and that we talk with them, look at everything but how the workforce gets the job. So we see issues of the jobs moving further away from the workforce, people needing to use private automobiles. At this point in time, this is hitting particularly hard in those industrial sectors or those economic sectors that are production industry. And we're hearing that in Medina County, we're hearing that in Lake County, we're hearing that in parts of Mahoning County. People can't get the workforce, they can't get to work. That's one of the aspects. If there are other aspects of it, that's one that we're concerned with. Now, unlike any other planning process I've been involved with, this planning process is not the wishful thinking of Santa Claus list. I said, well, a lot of the planning process we all have done are, what do you want? It's sort of like going to Santa Claus. What do I want for Christmas? It's a long list. This is more like what the conversation you had with your mother about what you're going to get for Christmas and the one big gift and your sister Sally needs one too. We can't do all this stuff. You got to make some decisions. But what we've done here, the scenario planning model technology allows us to look at the fiscal consequences of different choices. We start with information developed by the Federal Reserve for the 12 counties and added to it revenue and expenditure information filed with the state of Ohio by each of the 700 taxing jurisdictions in Northeast Ohio, aggregated into the 12 counties. What we see here, and this chart is really telling, zero is the baseline. Every community needs to balance its budget. Every taxing jurisdiction needs to balance its budget. That's the law. If you're above the line, you have a surplus. If you're below the line, you're in trouble. If we look today at the 12 counties, and these small dots represent each of the 12 counties, what we see is they're pretty tightly clustered around the baseline. Some are doing poorly. That's places like Trumbull County, which lost the Delphi operation and has been struggling. Some are doing well. That's Medina County up there. It's doing okay. Lorain County, it's doing okay. But if we continue the pattern we're on, based on the analytics of looking at the cost of the infrastructure that will be required and the cost of the consequence of the abandonment that is likely to take place, what we find is there is across the board about a 34% downward cost pressure. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to be 34% in deficit. That does mean that on that slope for the next 25 years, the sort of discussions we have in each one of our jurisdictions, how the hell are we going to get through the year? Do we have to raise taxes or cut cops? That conversation is going to continue. The conversation that Mayor Samaron out in Youngstown is having with Attorney General DeWine about we need more money for demo, well, that conversation is going to continue because this pattern is unsupportable. We also see a wider range of the counties. Some are doing better, some are doing way worse. But even the best performing county here, which I can't remember whether it's Lorain or Medina County, is worse off tomorrow than a worst performing county today. So we looked at that and we've looked at the, and I've got to look at some of the results in a minute, but we looked at that and looked again at the different scenarios. This is unsupportable. This is a recipe for Detroit. We have the technology now. It's like being on the Titanic and having radar. We finally have radar. We don't have a pair of binoculars. We can see the future much better today. And having seen that, we need to avoid the ice pack. So we started by asking people what they think. We presented this information to folks in six meetings across Northeast Ohio. Meeting here was over at the Urban League. We gave people maps, particularly of their general area. We gave them a set of chips. These chips represent the new construction that is projected to accommodate that 270,000 houses. It's in low density form. And we had set up a set of rules that said you can trade this for higher density if you want. You can talk about reinvestment or expansion if you want. Where do you want to go? And the discussion around the tables was, where should we place this? How should we trade it? Where should we go? There are about 61 tables that did this. Each one of those chips was digitized, all aggregated up. These are the categories, dispersed development, comp, and compact development, the reinvestment and reinforcement, and then agricultural conservation, other conservation. And then we wanted to know about bike and public transportation routes. What we found was a very interesting pattern. What we found is across the region, the people that attended suggested greater attention to the core legacy cities, and including the smaller ones like Alliance, that we thought to be reinvesting in the what are today's stronger neighborhoods, expansion and dispersed development is good, but stay closer to the core cities. Actually, this closely parallels where the current urbanized areas are with the three metros and where we have sewers or sewers planned. Equally striking to us was the comment that came out that we ought to preserve our agricultural land and engage in conservation. Now, there weren't a lot of people here that came from Wayne County. And yet, people in Northeast are understood the value of agriculture in Wayne County. That's their industry. That's their future. That's where Smuckers and others are. They said to us, leave these people alone. That wasn't the Wayne County Commissioners. That's their position. But that's how people felt. And they also said, we really appreciate the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. Make more of it and connect it. And we see ways in which connections came across. This is strikingly accurate. We didn't believe it. So one of our consultants, City Architecture, Paul Volpe, I think is going to be working with you on one of your projects in the Barbiton, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Paul had just completed a downtown study in downtown Painesville in Lake County. Downtown Painesville, the good board of directors of the hospital decided they were going to move that hospital out of downtown Painesville and put it out in the countryside, leaving a gaping hole in the downtown and an employment challenge for the city. So they engaged Paul's firm, City Architecture, to do a master plan. They involved about 600 people. And what came out of that was focus on that site and the surrounding sites, which we're very concerned with. Focus redevelopment around the square. Do compact development. We ran the numbers on it. They were about two-thirds of the way in terms of the density in the CHIP map that Paul, with a very disciplined planning process, came up with. And they said the same things. Focus on the core. There weren't a lot of people from Painesville at that meeting. And yet, when we talk to people across the region, we get this from everybody. People are concerned with what, and they've been concerned with, we went out 8 years ago, 9 years ago, with Voices and Choices. And one of the things we kept hearing was, we're concerned with the abandonment of our core cities, we're concerned with the erosion of our farmland. Do something about it. That's a broad theme. The other thing we did was then look at, we had something, a group called Quality Connected Places, which was sort of placemaking, and we looked at all these 400 jurisdictions. So, okay, what are they? What's going on here? We went out and looked at assets. We went out and looked at housing forms. We were required by the scenario planning methodology to boil a lot of different ideas. The plan was, sort of like your pavement ratings. We had about two dozen different ways of looking at communities, and the folks at Fraganese said, no, you got to boil it down to six. And these are very powerful ideas. One is the legacy industrial cities. Those are the historically industrial cities which are brownfields are located, but it's also where your urban universities are located, it's where your museums and symphonies are located, it's where the core of your transportation system, and those are the cities that have been most seriously faced with emptying out. But we also have a whole set of established cities and towns, Medina City, Massillon, Alliance, Kent, places that have their own history, and whether they've also kind of suburbanized, like the area around Kent, the core is a city that has a history. First ring suburbs are the suburbs that were basically built before 1960. They include the ones built right before the Depression, and then the ones that preceded right afterwards. Second ring is basically the next ones out, the 70s and the outer rings of the 80s. These are the average housing, the average age of housing. And, we talk about rings. It makes sense to look at rings in Cleveland. It doesn't work quite as well in some of the other areas. But what we think is really powerful is that these neighborhoods often share similar characteristics. These communities share similar characteristics. Warren and Elyria as legacy cities, but were built as Western Reserve towns, are very similar. But there's lessons that Medina and Kent can share with Chardon. And there are lessons that Parma can share with Austin Town. This set of classifications moves us forward. One of the things we've also seen is almost all of the new development that's taken place over the last 20 years has taken place in townships, which are your weakest form of government for dealing with the type of form that people want in their communities. They operate, as you know, with three township commissioners or volunteers, and may or may not rely on county planning commissions, which may or may not be staffed. But they're often the ones that have to make decisions at 8 o'clock at night on a cold February Tuesday night about what happens at the to create a new subdivision, and they do the best they can. But we see some real interesting and important challenges there. So we asked people in one of the sessions, well, what do you think? This is called a visual preference survey. And so let's look at all six of those. Let's look at some very positive images of each one. Everyone, we got good images. They gave everybody their best foot forward. What communities do you, do you use, value, enjoy the first ring suburbs? Should we invest in the region in the first ring suburbs? And we just asked basically red and green dots. What we found was striking. What we found was there were three types of communities that were well above the others. The legacy cities, 95%. The first ring suburbs, 91%. The established cities and towns, 86%. Those are the places people said, by those numbers across 10 meetings, we ought to invest in. The answer to the second question. The second ring rural townships and outer ring suburbs were well below that. That didn't say people don't want to invest in it. They didn't see the urgency. That's the way we're interpreting it. Because we tried to present each one of them as desirable places to live because they are. But the concern is with the core areas and also our older cities and towns. Now again, I talked about the scenario planning. And it's really challenging to look at a region our scale. The 12 counties is about the size of the state of Connecticut. It's a very big area, and for a long, very long period of time. So we agreed to look at it in two dimensions. First, let's just look at, can we grow our way out of it? What happens if we get that million people or that 800,000 people? What if we grow and just continue the way that we've been heading? What are the consequences on our land, on our air and water quality, on our budgets? Then we said, okay, let's look at it from a different way. Let's look at doing things differently. We stay with the same projections. Let's look at what happens if we do things differently but our growth patterns stay the same. And finally, we combine the two. Now, scenario planning is not a plan. It's a tool for learning. It's a tool for testing. It's a what-if analysis. It's a way of probing. It's like a stress test. If we do this, where do we wind up? If we do that, where do we wind up? So to help us make better decisions, each scenario tests these different assumptions about the people, jobs, priorities, and policies for the region. And it yields a rich field of data with which we can compare the different choices we have. We looked at population, employment, population growth, employment growth, the new parks and conservation, the new housing units constructed, and the housing units abandoned, and there's a second sheet I'll go through. But what we see is basically under the trend and scenario and the do things differently scenario, we grow by less than 100,000 people, and we grow about 100,000 jobs. If we were competitive with the rest of the country, we'd grow about 875,000 people and 500,000 jobs. We're suggesting that we could add additional parkland in the do things differently scenario. We're right now on track to conserve about 10% of the land area in parks and conservation. We could get up to 15% on the do things differently. There's some pressures on parks that way. We looked again at the housing. We're basically building 275,000 new units, growing the same. We almost double that. Doing things differently, we've cut it in half. Growing the same, we're somewhat lower, about 100,000 less. what does that say? That says there will be new development, but there's a good deal more renovation. And the killer fact here is we go from 175,000 units abandoned under the trend scenario to between 2,000 and 20,000 in doing things differently, whether you grow or not. So big impact on the abandoned. That's, you know, the 175,000 units, that's 18 houses a day. That's about $1.5 billion at $10,000 a pop. Yes.
Just to do a time check, it's about 20 after 8.
Yeah.
So to leave time for discussion and things, too, I was going to see if you could start to get into some of the recommendations.
I will.
Or also if any of you guys had
questions
right now, because I know there's been a lot covered already.
And we're putting a lot of stuff out there. These are the numbers, and I'll skip through the rest of this early part. But what we see on the fiscal side is a swing from about 33% negative to between 10 and 13% to the positive, from doing what we're doing to doing things differently. So we tested it in a number of different ways. Our participation was very proportional across the region, with Summit and Portage really participating at its level. We've developed these recommendations that we're going to get into in a minute from our board, from a technical steering committee that Jason sits on, of the four MPO directors and MEFCO, from caucuses of subject matter leaders, our vision sessions, and from email. So out of this, we're getting not only the framework, but data, specific work products that local governments can use, and the tools, the scenario planning tools. And we'll be producing a final report, an executive summary, which is much more manageable, and a roadmap or poster plan. But also important, we're going to be producing communications tools and PowerPoints to take out to the communities. So let's talk about the objectives. The objectives, overarching objective that we've heard is promoting investment in our established communities. Also important, developing a regional economy with accessible employment opportunities. Accessible means you can get a job because you've got the training. We've asked the question, can you get to the job? So we're really focused on that house to job site relationship. Improving our fiscal health. With the loss of local government funds, we're all faced with downward pressure, whether or not we want it. Enhancing our regional transportation system, protecting our soil, air, water, and ecologically sensitive areas, cultivating our local assets and places of value. Each and every one of our communities has a pride point. How can we talk about it, link it, and use those as the focal points of a development strategy? Our parks and open spaces, again, are a pride point for the region as a whole, but we need to expand and connect them. And preserving and valuing our prime farmland. Stop talking about farmland and agricultural land as land for future development and understand a lot of it's prime farmland. God didn't make any more of it. So we have several themes, four themes I want to talk about, but it basically revolves around these five points. Strengthening our established community, providing a diversity of neighborhoods and place types to meet the changing needs of our communities. Provide a diversity of transportation options. Invest in our legacy cities and established towns and villages. And preserve the agricultural and natural character of our rural landscapes. Treat our farmland as an asset, not as an inventory. And in terms of what it means for your area, it means really strengthening your core cities, particularly Akron and Canton, and the corridor between them, which includes Green, and linking the Kent, and tying these communities to the rest of the region in a much more intentional, regional-wide way than we have. We've got, as I said, nine recommendations and 41 initiatives. It is not a one-size-fits-all situation. The initiatives will not all be applicable to each of our counties or each part of our counties. And the decision to make to implement is a local decision. We are not in a position to tell anybody to do anything. We can simply recommend that those 400 jurisdictions and the 12 counties and the four MPOs, that's where the things have to be decided. The first theme, again, is strengthening our established communities with new residential and commercial development on sites within established communities. And developing, and this is the wonky language of transportation planning, and this and the intact there, two groups that actually understand what this line means. a robust network of regional job centers connected by multimodal transportation corridors. In other words, focus your jobs where you can serve it with buses. Make it possible to get there. Stop spreading everything all over the place and then wondering why people can't get there. Pursue the remediation and assembly and marketing of our abandoned industrial properties as a regional priority, not simply as a local priority. Encourage high frequency of mixed-use development and increase the range of housing options. So it comes down to, again, encouraging infill investment in our existing legacy cities and towns, customizing the strategies based on the challenges, expanding compact housing options. What are compact housing? That's the traditional housing we've all, many of us grew up in. The house, the sidewalk, the driveway, the neighbors, you can walk some to some places. It's not on a huge lot somewhere way out. Those options, people want those, but there's not a lot of new product in the region dealing with them, and provide a range of housing types, but account for the cost of providing services. There are very good examples in the southern part of Portage County areas, from the transit center in Kent to the investment that the city and the state and the county and everybody made in Goodyear, to Hudson, and to the investments that you see in downtown Akron in particular. And again, for this area here, it speaks to the challenges of focusing on reinvestment of the existing communities, looking at the cores and accounting, or looking at the areas that are likely to see new development, seeing to what degree we can focus on our existing sewered areas to avoid continued expansion of our footprint. Second theme is increasing transportation choice. This is in your wheelhouse. Enhancing and coordinating the region's rail and bus system. We have 12 counties. Most of them have transit agencies of some sort. They tend to try to work together, but it is impossible, and I've tried to do this on several occasions, to get from Akron to Cleveland to work. You can get from Cleveland to Akron to work on a bus. You can't get from Akron to Cleveland to work on a timely way. And you certainly can't get from Youngstown to Akron at all on a bus, unless you want to take a Greyhound in the middle of the day. We think it's imperative that our transit agencies continue to be encouraged and frankly enabled and supported in creating a coordinated regional system that links and leverages our individual county systems, and enhancing walking and cycling as a transportation option to increase mobility and health. What we're saying is this. We need to expand the regional transit network by connecting the very good systems, and in some cases, like Lorain County, the very poor systems, to each other along corridors that in some cases exist but need to be reinforced and better coordinated. Focusing the major developments around transit nodes to provide that ridership incentive and provide for multimodalism. And we've laid out a network here that builds on the commuter rail studies that were done some years ago, builds on the existing systems in each one of our counties, but suggests that we start with a system of express buses that builds on those systems that already exist, like from Lake County to Cuyahoga County and from Summit to Cuyahoga, but we need to make them two-way. And this, again, is what we're suggesting. And third is preserve and protect our natural resources. Preserve for future generations our natural resources and develop our regional approach to protecting air, water, and soil, and support sustainable agriculture in Northeast Ohio. This is important because it's important to people. This is a polling method we used, a couple of polling methods we used, on an online game and the other a process in our meetings, where we ask people their priorities. The number one priority in 10 of the 12 counties of the people that participated in the game called Imagine My Neo was clean air, water, and land. It was number two in the other two, I believe. This is the most important thing on people's minds. Even in places like Mahoning County, where you might expect that jobs trumps in the environment, it doesn't. And again, the AMADS areas, somewhat in Portage County, have exceptional examples, the key one being the National Park, and everybody's desire to link to it. We are on track to get about 10% of our land area in total in parks and conservation, but if we don't, we do something about the expansion of our footprint, we are likely to lose somewhere around 30,000 acres of prime farmland, 6,000 acres of higher ecological value land, and create about 28,000 acres of new pervious surface. So what we've suggested is a collaborative effort across the region to link our park resources to create the corridors to focus and target. We'll collaborate on areas of conservation to use riparian corridors to protect our watershed, but also to create habitat corridors and potentially bikeways and connect to the lake and connect to the national park. Those are the two regional assets everybody wants to get to. So we suggested a region-wide sort of high-end core bikeway and trail map that takes the very good work that's been done at the county and metro level and links them together so that we have basically the broad arterial structure with a freeway structure into which the individual counties can fit. And again, what it's suggesting for the AMATS area is really understanding the importance of the start of the spaceship Enterprise and that the national park and the desire of people to connect to it, make that possible, and protect the quality of our rivers and their tributaries. And finally, promote collaboration and efficiency, increase collaboration among our government agencies, and expand information sharing. That's one of the things we can do through the NEAS process, which is one thing I'm trying to do tonight, and also seek to find more cost-effective ways of providing services. So we put it together. The existing land use map suggests that if we continue out, we can just continue to expand to the from our existing urbanized areas out and leave the cores behind, add cost at both ends of the spectrum because of the relatively modest population. And we see urbanization taking place in places like Girard County that particularly want it, Northern Portage expansion into prime farmland in Medina into Lorain as well. And putting at risk some of the best land we've got in Northeast Ohio. So we're suggesting very strongly that we focus on a more generally compact pattern that addresses the issues of abandonment head-on, addresses the issues of the cost of expansion head-on by analyzing the costs and working in the different forums, whether it's MPOs or counties or cities, to ask the question, can we do more with less? But we also identified a number of places to build on. One of the Western Reserve towns, which we have a number of, that's a very unique, in the national context, a very unique urban landform that we need to celebrate. We suggest innovation zones, particularly around our three urban state universities in Cleveland, Akron, and Youngstown, and around Kent State, Case Western Reserve. Like a cultural district, which is emerging and very strong in Kent, is one of the drivers of that community. Our industrial waterfronts we see as opportunities, not only for industry, but also for recreation. And one of the things that's near and dear to my soul as somebody who spent a great deal of time in the Mahoning Valley, stop calling these industrial sites brownfields and walking away from them. They have the rail, they have the road, they have the water, they have the power. You clean them up, as Youngstown did in the old U.S. Steelworks, and for $20 million of stimulus money for a rail siding, they leveraged $750 million in investment. So we've identified the largest, best, most marketable, most well-equipped existing abandoned or underutilized industrial sites in Northeast Ohio across the region, and we're suggesting relabeling them new industrial opportunity sites. And instead of letting Youngstown fare for its fend for itself or Akron fend for itself as a region that built its wealth on manufacturing, as a region that has the infrastructure to make things and the attitude to make things, to get back to business making things. And that's what we're suggesting, again, sort of broad regional look in the Akron area with an innovation zone, with industrial opportunity sites in Akron and Barberton to the north. With the cultural district in Kent, as well as the university, and down in Kent, tying them together, being much more conservative with the use of land in terms of expansion, and much more conservative with the use of land in terms of reusing our existing infrastructure. So, we are going to come forward in a week with a draft vision and framework for our board, present that in January and February to organizations like this, and seek the approval of our body in February. And one of the things Jason and particularly other MPO directors have asked us to do is presentations like this tonight to work the framework through your process so that you can say with conviction in February, this is something we want to approve, we recommend approving, this is something we see as a valuable tool as we do our next long-range transportation plan, our air quality plan, work with our constituents about what actually works, and develop and perfect these tools. Thank you.
I'll tell you what, before we go into any questions, could we please just take a few minutes and complete our parliamentary duties, and then hopefully have some minutes before we have to vacate the room.
I think if you want to have questions, we better do them now, because they're going to come kick us out probably in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
I think since there was so much presented, if you guys have questions, we should do that now. And
because we could have an entire meeting on this subject. Our whole 2 hours, whatever.
Glutton for punishment. If you'd like to do that, if you'd like to come back.
Okay. Why don't we? Well, yeah, that would, especially after you go through this process. But why don't we just go around the table quickly and see if anybody's got anything? Mr. Mackey, Mr. Mangold.
Super quick. Your funding is from a federal grant.
Yeah, the funding for this came from two sources. A federal grant through the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and a cash match from the Fund for Economic Future.
And is this going to be sustainable, or is this something that's going to be shut off and forgotten about?
Well, it'll be sustainable if you use it first. First you make a plan, then you got to work a plan. We are working, and our executive committee is focused on the future post-federal grant, which is time-limited and terminated. But it's a planning grant. It mostly goes to MPOs, which have a life beyond. We are a nonprofit that needs to see continuing funding.
We need to
keep
it sustainable, and you certainly got my interest with the diversity of transportation. Good idea.
The only comment I would have is at some point I see a huge collision coming, because as grim as some of the conditions are in our area, the abandoned properties, the job generation, population loss, you're going to run up against the stakeholders at some point who like things just the way they are. Mm-hmm. And I hope that your planning includes that day, because I see it coming.
Well, that day's already come.
Okay. And we've been dealing with a number of folks that think this whole thing is crazy. I wish, as somebody who promoted Cleveland and Youngstown for a good many years, I wish I didn't have cities. But that's what the numbers are telling us. This is a framework. It's not a plan. And communities are free to walk off the cliff if they want. But what we're suggesting is, particularly as when we have costs that are shared, the decisions that are made at this body and AMATS and NOAACA about where to spend limited federal money on roadways and transportation, those are common dollars. Are you going to put them in bikeways, sidewalks, and buses, or are you going to put them in freeway expansions? What are your choices? This is the first step, we hope, of a different way of thinking about these things, testing the options before we jump. Looking, if we could have looked with the tools we have today 27 years ago at Red Highlands, we might have come up with something different, and we certainly might have had a much stronger argument with Dick Jacobs about extending the Shaker Rapid line into the heart of that, which he resisted.
And I'd like to add there, Mike, I think, and this is my personal opinion, I think it's very healthy and important for the region, given this framework, to look at these problems and challenges that Hunter's outlined and have a true debate about what's the most effective way to come to grips. But my personal opinion is that's the discussion we should have, not I think there are contingents of people that feel, and it's to your point, there's no problem at all. I would argue 175,000 vacant. And I don't think that's an exaggeration. I mean, if Cleveland's lost over 500,000 people since 1950, Youngstown's lost two-thirds of its population. I mean, we've already seen these trends, and I think there are really serious fiscal realities. Whether you're in one of those central cities or not, eventually that blight and abandonment spreads And I think we've seen areas all over the region that, you know, yesterday's hot area to live is tomorrow's, you know, blighted and abandoned area. So I think it's really important.
You've got a lot of meetings coming up within actually a short period of time. So after you go through those, I'd like to see you come back and give us an assessment. And
I'd love to do that.
And maybe have more time for some questions. I know we've got some people, unfortunately, are not here tonight.
May I have your attention, please? The library will close in 20 minutes. Please make final selections now. Thank you.
So, I mean, certainly as the chairperson, I'd certainly like to see you come back. And
I will, and I think it might be very valuable when we get the feedback and so where people are to not only come back and report on it, but to, you know, start the conversation, how are you going to use it?
And to Dave's question, I think, you know, as a board member, we are having the discussions Hunter mentioned that I think we all want to continue as a nonprofit. And now that this first phase of kind of data collection and analysis is coming to an end and there's this policy framework that Hunter presented, I think the 2014 challenge is for us to kind of drill down, figure out a couple things we really want to advocate for and try to move the dial on, and then that'll get us into issues of, so do we need to raise money, do we need a budget, and things like that. So we'll kind of focus on what is the work and then how do we best carry it out.
I will say that NOACA's got a new director. She just came out as this project was sort of finishing its first year in this lane, and she needed to do a strategic plan to put the work on OAC in some broader framework to get an understanding of what we're doing. So she's really taken this information for her five counties and started to work with. I think each one of the planning groups, like EMS, they use it differently, but I can see this being a very valuable tool for not only creating a framework, but creating some analytics that we can use.
Okay.
Is a short version of this going to be given next week at the policy meeting?
Yeah, actually, Hunter will be back. He was at TAC today. He's here, so he's
a short version of TAC.
He'll get to know us very well. But and I would imagine too, Dave, once the NEOSCC board approves some of the preliminary recommendations, I think that's going to be put out on the website. And so you'll be able to grab this presentation online and some of the other supporting materials.
I missed our local meeting. I felt bad about that.
And we got, I think, what the handouts included two handouts. One is a sort of a two-pager, the broad summary of what we're doing, and really focusing also on the tools, the dashboard, the toolkit, and the pilots on the policy recommendations. So another key part of this, of teeing up the next phase. But also to the top, the top recommendations that are coming forward.
I'd certainly like to thank you for coming tonight, as well as all of our guests. And we certainly hope to see all of you back at some occasion in the future, but this is important work. And speaking of which, we really should wrap up our formal agenda before our deadline. I read into the record the five resolutions for our consideration tonight, resolutions 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21, three of which are directly connected with the 271 project. At this time, I'd like to invite any of our members to submit motions in connection with these resolutions, either as a package, as we have been accustomed to doing, or separately.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mackey, I move that we combine all five resolutions that we've done in the past. These have been available on the website from AMATS for review. Unless somebody's got some real problems with I-271, safe routes to schools, and converting buses to compressed natural gas, I move that we combine them and vote on.
All right. Do I have a second?
I second.
Mr. Kish? All right. We have a motion and a second on resolutions 2013-17 through 21. Any further discussion on the resolutions and the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to collectively approve resolutions 2013-17 through 21, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Also, you have a copy of, in your packets, the 2014 MS meeting calendar. Just as information. And the final bit of business we have is on the formal agenda is the election of CIC officers for 2014. Do we have any proposals in that regard?
I think what we've done before is if anyone wants to nominate anyone or be a part of that, you know, we will accept those.
And if
I move, we keep the boss the boss.
What are you staring at me for?
I was going to say, that was the other part of our suggestion. If no one really is interested in stepping forward, I know Mike earlier said he would agree to serve again, so you can go that route.
Well, it's a privilege to serve. I'm humbled by some of the people come in. They're so well-informed and well-educated on these issues that it's a continuing work in progress. So, yes, I would like to continue. So.
And I always get asked to be vice chair, but you can see my attendance is pathetic. I can try.
But you'd like to.
You're not going to see my name. You better start.
I think if you'd like to volunteer, Dave, that's fine because right now we don't have one.
Well, last time I didn't accept, and does anybody else here want to do it? The regular members.
I don't get here regular either.
I mean, Mike, let me know if you're not going to be here, and I'll go on my way to try to be here. If not, you'll have to ad lib. I'll be back traveling on the road, but I think during the spring semester I'll be back in school, so attendance should be regular for the spring meetings.
We appreciate your service.
Do you believe we need a motion on that?
Yeah, do you guys want to do a quick vote just to make it official to confirm the slate of officers?
That was a motion.
That was a motion to keep the boss the boss.
Mr. Mackey has made the motion for our officers to be Michael Ondecker as chairperson and David Mangold as vice. And we have a second from Mr. Kish. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of such a slate for next year, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Our next regular meeting is Thursday, January 23rd, 2014. Back here again at 7 p.m. And again, thanks to everyone for coming out tonight. Mr. Mackey.
One additional item. I have reading material for the AMAT staff and a Christmas present that Mr. Segedy can open with the staff tomorrow.
Oh, thank you. You shouldn't have. Appreciate it, Bill. We always appreciate your reading material.
Mr. Segedy can open it.
I will
open it. No, that's not enough.
Make sure.
Well, I will show the same generosity.
And happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Good New Year. Happy holidays.